Welcome to On Social Health and Change, brought to you by Adler University. I'm your host, Hannah Stanley, and today we're talking about mental illness in children. With me is Steve Migalski, a professor in Adler's Doctor of Psychology and Clinical Psychology program and a licensed clinical psychologist. Steve, thank you so much for coming in today and joining us. Before we talk about mental illness in children, you're here to offer a big caveat, which is that there's a big problem with overdiagnosis for anything in that autism spectrum disorder umbrella, including ADHD and pediatric bipolar disorder, that whole thing that we hear all the time you feel is overdiagnosed.
Yeah, I do. Thanks very much for inviting me to be with you here today. Sadly, misdiagnosis is a reality in mental health care and in medicine in general, for that matter. But the variables that are responsible for misdiagnosis of psychiatric illness really are numerous. And with respect to the three conditions that you mentioned, I would say in large part what's responsible for that misdiagnosis is parents really wanting the best for their children, but not really necessarily understanding what's actually best in terms of seeking out the appropriate kind of healthcare. Clinicians wanting to be helpful, but not always knowing exactly how to be most helpful. And then also scholars and professional authors wanting to disseminate their findings and ideas, but the public really often misunderstanding those publications. And, you know, these diagnostic trends, they do often begin after there's been a sort of an explosion of popular or scientific literature, books, journal articles in the mainstream, or either perhaps a national news program having an hour-long program on a particular disorder like autism or pediatric bipolar or ADHD. And also, I would say, another contributing factor would be when various awareness campaigns and advocacy groups gain significant momentum to try to assist families with these issues. There was a book published years back called The Bipolar Child, and that was in the late 90s. And in the early 90s, Driven to Distraction, a book by Rady and Hollowell. Those kinds of publications really drum up a lot of interest and may lead to a misunderstanding of these conditions.
All right. So while we are happy when awareness is brought to different issues, because they can help those who are maybe not being diagnosed who need to be, it also can raise some red flags to parents who then say, well, can we check him for this? Because he is having a hard time paying attention during school. Or the teacher mentioned that he's struggling, and then that could lead to an ADHD or ADD or any of those types because the parent is then asking or requesting.
Yeah, I mean, parents get very concerned. Obviously, they want what's best for their kids, and they will seek out primary care physicians because those are the healthcare providers that are the point of entry. Mm-hmm. And despite primary care physicians' effort to be helpful, primary care physicians are not specialists in mental health care. Mm-hmm. And they are also the number one prescribing physician of psychotropic meds, not psychiatrists. Mm-hmm. So you can really find yourself, or I should say parents can really find themselves in a position where they're not receiving services from specialists, and then things can go awry from there.
Do we run the risk too? And as you mentioned, parents obviously want what's best. So we have one child, let's say the older sibling, who has been diagnosed with ADHD. And then the parent sees similar behavior patterns. They go straight and go, hey, I want to nip this in the bud. And then we fall into that, sure, let's just medicate them. Is this something that is possibly familial, or is this something that each child has to be or should be analyzed differently and individually?
You raise a very interesting point, the hereditary aspect of ADHD. Of all the mental health conditions, ADHD is one of the conditions with the highest level of heredity.
Okay.
And so certainly when clinicians in the know are evaluating children for ADHD, they're taking a very thorough family history to try to understand whether or not there is a genetic lineage of the condition. But on the other side of the coin, every child, every individual for that matter, really has to be understood subjectively and uniquely. And so you can absolutely have one child in a family with ADHD where the other children in the SIPSHIP are not at all struggling with that condition. So we don't want to put the cart before the horse, so to speak.
Right. We can't assume.
We can't.
So we understand why parents would start with a pediatrician. That's their go-to. They have the relationship. It's likely that that's where they need to start for insurance purposes to get a referral. Why are we not seeing those referrals as much as you're indicating we should be?
Well, I would throw one bit of information in there that it depends really on what kind of insurance a person and family has. Mm-hmm. If they have an HMO, you're right. They're going to have to go to their primary care physician to get referrals. Mm-hmm. And what I think we need to be doing is building better networks of mental health providers with primary care physicians so that those referrals can occur and those children and families can make their way to specialists. But when folks have PPO policies, they're free to see whomever they want.
Okay.
It's important, I think, also to mention the fact that there are a lot of people in this country that have neither HMO nor PPO. They mm-hmm. may have Kid Care, which is a state-funded program. They might have Medicare or Medicaid, and it becomes very difficult to find specialists who are providers who will be in the know, so to speak, to really help those families across the broad spectra of socioeconomic statuses.
Are we? Do they have access in most public schools, any public schools, with, aside from maybe a social worker, but anyone who would be more of a specialist who could either refer out or reach out to the parents or guardians?
Sometimes school social workers have really good working alliances with child psychiatrists in a number of communities, and so that's a really good avenue for that. But I would say that it's really important that people know what their, when I say people, I mean professionals, know mm-hmm. what their scope of practice is. Teachers and school social workers are also not specialists in neurodevelopmental disorders like ADHD and autism, nor are they specialists, not necessarily specialists, in psychiatric ailments like bipolar illness and depression. So it really is about finding the right specialist. And we specialists reaching out to other professionals, allied healthcare professionals, and allied professionals in the schools to be able to create these routes of treatment for the kids and families.
So when we do have the parental unit, the guardian, et cetera, taking the child in to, let's say, the pediatrician, why are they then prescribing, diagnosing and prescribing versus making that simple recommendation or referral to a specialist?
Wow, that's a complicated question, but I'll do my best to answer it. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes physicians, pediatricians, and primary care physicians desperately want to be helpful, and they want to respond to the urgencies that parents raise in the office. Mm-hmm. But they may not have the time in their schedule to spend more than 15 or 20 minutes for an assessment or intervention. And so rather than rely on the observation of that child over the course of multiple meetings, which is really a standard of care in the assessment of ADHD. You mm-hmm. will meet the child for multiple settings and you'll rely on multiple sources of data. The pediatrician or the primary care physician may not have the luxury of doing that. And so that's, I think, one of the answers to your question. I think the other answer, which is a sticky wicket, so to speak, is that the insurance companies really, they incentivize for psychiatrists sessions that are medication management sessions. And psychiatrists will make upwards of $200 for a 15 or 20 minute medication management appointment. And a psychotherapy session, either provided by a psychiatrist or a psychologist, will reimburse at a rate of anywhere from $80 to $150. So you can imagine.
So financially, it makes more sense for the psychiatrist to medicate.
Financially, but not in terms of standard of care.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, so ethically, it might not always make the most sense, but absolutely. Financially, if they are then managing the medication during one of their sessions, they're reimbursed more money.
They surely are. Medication management sessions, which are, as I said, shorter in time, are reimbursed at far higher levels.
Does this play through with the pediatricians as well?
No. Okay. We're talking specifically here in terms of how a psychiatrist might manage his or her practice.
Okay.
And you know, Illinois is an interesting state. We are now one of three states in which psychologists with additional postdoctoral training can prescribe medication as well. And so our hope is that psychologists with prescription privileges in the future, who were trained first as psychologists, will serve as appropriate agents of change in healthcare and model better practice for mental health professionals in general.
Do you feel, and this is an opinion clearly, but do you feel that when we become, where that's far more the standard and far more the model, that those referrals will be more common because we will have more of the psychologist? It gives the patients more of a choice of who to see. The pediatricians might then refer.
It's possible. I think if we hold our breath and wait for prescribing psychologists, we're gonna not
wait
be able to
time.
Breathe very well. I think the better route is to build multidisciplinary treatment teams of social workers and educators and psychologists and psychiatrists and pediatricians who are more comfortable working together in teams and maybe not necessarily even under the same roof, but in the same community where they are less reluctant to refer out. That would be a far better scenario for the children and for the families.
So as a parent who takes the child to see the pediatrician and might or might not be referred to a specialist, but comes home with a diagnosis of any of what we've talked about, autism spectrum disorder, anything on that ASD under that umbrella, ADHD, ADD, of course, which is a sister of that, pediatric bipolar disorder. At what point do the parent need to question, is this about the medication? Or is this an accurate diagnosis? Because once the child is medicated, obviously the behavior is going to change, but you don't want them medicated if they don't need it.
Yeah, that's a great question. It's sort of a what comes first, the chicken or the egg? With respect to prepping parents and families, I work really hard in my practice in Andersonville to help parents understand what kinds of questions they really need to ask of providers. Even if they decide they're not going to work with us in our practice, it's important that parents know to ask whether or not clinicians are specialists, to ask how many children and adolescents have you worked with in your career, in the last year, in the last 5 years? What is your standard of care? How do you approach the treatment and diagnosis of ADHD? These are questions that some families may actually be reluctant to ask their healthcare providers, but I think that that is a far better way to be educated as a consumer, as a parent who's looking for services for their children.
Do you want to encourage parents to ask for the course of treatment? Perhaps, why did you start with this dosage? Or how long do you envision my child being on this medication? Or how soon before we reevaluate the dosage and the type of medication?
Boy, that would be a wonderful situation if parents felt more comfortable,
more empowered,
to ask those questions. I think they're reasonable questions, and I think what we can be doing in our work as psychologists and as counselors is we can teach parents how to access service, asking, what is your recommended course of treatment for my child? How are you arriving at diagnostic clarification? How do you know that my child has ADHD or autism spectrum disorder or some other psychiatric ailment? Many parents do not know that there are no ironclad blood tests.
Right. For, it's not cancer.
No, there's absolutely no blood test. There's no biometric marker that allows us to say, yes, this child has ADHD. And so I think helping families understand what is involved in the diagnostic process of clarifying mental health conditions is part of this process.
So when a parent comes to you specifically, or someone in your caliber, more of a specialist, is it a description of behavior? Is it notes from school, home? What are you looking for that puts them into one category versus another?
All right, let's use ADHD as the example. So inattention and restlessness and wavering concentration and even mild hyperactivity out of context can be normative and non-clinical. We see it in all children. It can be a normal...
Too much sugar.
Yeah, or just a function of their temperament, right?
Yes.
And so what I'm looking for is multiple kinds of data, observational, historical, interview, neuropsychological. I want to know whether or not a child's cognitive abilities in working memory and in executive functioning are impaired. I mean, we forget sometimes that ADHD, as our example here, is in fact a disorder of working memory. Mm-hmm. It's not just inconvenient, wavering attention. So it really needs to be at the benchmark of what is clinically significant and can't just be demarcated as clinical on the hunch of the clinician. There's got to be a good, solid collection of data that are amassed over time. And, mm-hmm. I may have a hunch that a child has ADHD after an hour appointment, but I will spend, four, five, six sessions over the course of 3 weeks clarifying, collecting, interviewing collateral members of the family, talking to teachers. That takes a lot of time. And that may not be seen as practical by some clinicians.
Well, or by some families who might be more financially challenged. They can't afford to come in for 4 appointments. They need the medication.
They need the medication,
yeah,
because they believe that. And this is really a problem, I think. It speaks to a problem with the philosophy of mental health in America. We tend to think about mental health conditions as residing entirely in the biology of a child, adolescent, or adult.
Okay. And a chemical imbalance.
Yeah, it's inside of them.
I'm just making this like as a random mom. I think he has a chemical imbalance, that one.
Right. Yeah. And although biology is certainly important,
yeah,
those of us in the know don't take a monolithic biomedical approach. We take a biopsychosocial approach, which means we look for causal factors in the biology of the child, mm-hmm, and in the biogenetic history of the child, but also in the psychosocial functioning of the child, in the child's personality, in the child's temperament, and then the social piece of the biopsychosocial model. We also look for the explanatory factors in the environment, in the culture of the child and the child's family. So if you reduce the child merely to his biology or her biology, you miss out on the complexity of the picture.
So as a parent listening to this, if my child were on medication for any of stick with ADHD because that's the example we're going for, I would be really wanting to question whether or not, especially if they've been on it for a while, they still needed it, or if the dosage was appropriate, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I want for you to give your best advice to parents listening to this going, wait a second, the pediatrician gave it to me based on one, like my request, or based on the fact that my other child needed the meds, so they just medicated the second one. I'd be a little concerned that they were just kind of willy-nilly dosing meds.
My best suggestion to parents and families listening is that if a psychotropic medication is prescribed after a brief appointment with a child, and by brief I mean 30 minutes or more, and multiple sources of data have not been collected, and the child's not been observed at least twice, preferably more, 3 or 4 times, mm-hmm, then that family might be suspect of the diagnosis and the treatment. I think it's also important that we realize that our role as mental health providers is to educate parents about the science that's being published. A brand new meta-analysis came out just a few days ago, has indicated that the best course of treatment for ADHD, is not medicine first, but psychosocial services first. So cognitive behavioral therapy, family counseling, parent guidance. And then if after that intervention is unsuccessful and the symptoms don't remit or they worsen, then medication as an adjunct makes sense. The research in this meta-analysis suggests that when we put children on psychostimulant medication first, even when the ADHD is legitimate, they don't do as well as they would if we had started them on psychosocial treatment first.
Because they don't have the tools.
That's right.
Final question, and then we're going to wrap up our time together. But how quickly do these conditions arise? If we have a child who has not exhibited the ADHD behavior and all of a sudden they enter a new grade and it starts, is that something that says something's shifted? Or is it something where we go, it's probably not ADHD because that would have developed or that would have always been that child?
That's a great question, because what we know is that ADHD in particular is a pervasive longitudinal disorder. It does not sort of come and go with the wind. Okay. It's pervasive and it's non-cyclical, and it tends not to be triggered solely by environmental stressors. So okay. What we want to do is we want to understand the child in context over time and observe that child to see whether or not those symptoms are numerous enough to move from a normative understanding of inattention and hyperactivity to a clinical understanding. And that would be the standard of care.
All right. So if your child then, and this is an example, is behaving fine during the summer, getting a ton of activity, really, really fine, their memory is clear and sharp, and then they start school and you think, oh, the ADHD has kicked in, that's likely not ADHD.
It's likely not. It could be. I mean, it's the situation that you're creating is an interesting one, because sometimes children with ADHD actually do better when they have less environmental confines. But the scenario that you created for the example, it wouldn't be my first suspicion. I would, as an ADHD specialist, I would consider competing hypotheses rather than just test the simple hypothesis that it's ADHD or not. I'd want to look at numerous possibilities. And I think that's really the best approach to understanding children and adolescents in context.
All right. So what we want parents, everybody wants parents to be able to do is be more vigilant about what's being prescribed to their children, how that is being chosen as appropriate for their child, and ask those questions of prognosis and dosage and all these other OSIS words that I'm not coming up with right now, but really be very proactive and be your child's advocate in how they are being diagnosed and medicated.
Absolutely. That, seek out information from a specialist. And I'd add one more thing. Mm-hmm. Don't rely on education from pharmaceutical commercials that you see on television. That will not be the place to find the best information.
Or the internet.
Absolutely.
Because it can be a wonderful place of knowledge if you are savvy with it. All right. So really just dig as much as you can
and find a specialist.
Find a specialist if you are at all able to. Thank you, Steve, so much for your knowledge, really, and your specialization in this, and sharing your words. This is really, really insightful. We are going to come back for part two when we talk about how families overcome the stigma of a child with mental illness. I'm Hannah Stanley. This is on Social Health and Change, presented by Adler University. Make sure to hit subscribe so you don't miss any of our fantastic content. Thank you so much for listening.